Welcome to the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. This is South Australia's summer cricket wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define cricket across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk cricket with Sophie Hilditch and Ben Hook.
Thanks, Wallace. Hey, Hooky, how are you going? How's your past week been?
G'day, Soph. My week has been very, very relaxed, in particular in comparison to yours, where you have been right in and amongst it at the Australian Open. You've done some incredible work for us. It was of astounding quality. Congratulations to you and Wallace on everything you have done. We're here to talk about cricket tonight, and I want to cut to the chase and get to it very shortly. But first of all, give me 30 seconds, your overarching view of the Crown Australian Open and just your whole experience of it.
Well, I don't think 30 seconds is enough, but I'll try my best. It was an absolute blast. I loved every single moment. Royal Melbourne is just an incredible golf course, watching that creativity coming from those players and then being able to go into the media centre and actually be there for the presses and to hear their insight straight away. I loved every moment. Highlight of the week, though, I got a smile from Rory McIlroy. And there was no one else there. It was just Wallace and me. Wallace had his back to the window. It was just me. And that was the highlight of my week. Need a photo of him. I didn't need a signature. My Rory hat wasn't even on. And I got a smile.
Imagine if you'd had the Rory hat on. It would have been a smile and a high five. I am aware that you spent a bit of time in the media centre. I am aware that you may be, you're a bit of a unicorn in there, young woman in amongst a bunch of crusty old men. So I don't know if uncomfortable is the right word, but certainly you would have raised some eyebrows, I suspect.
Yes, I think trading on some other people's turf, which is fair enough. I'm new to the scene. I'm very fresh. I was walking around in a pink dress and then the next day in bright green pants. I didn't have the back pat that matched everyone else, but they were all incredibly friendly. We actually got to spend some time with a lot of the cameramen who were talking to us, which was a perspective I hadn't looked at, but how good Royal Melbourne was for photographers. It was like a dream come true with all the different heights they could get from. And it really showed the photos and the footage of the Royal Melbourne. We have people like Max Homer watching on Instagram saying, I need to come next year because this looks so incredible.
Yeah, amazing. I'd love to spend more time talking Australian Open with you. Wallace and I had a great chat about it a couple of nights ago. That, of course, is something that people may want to listen to. I would encourage them to go back and listen to your daily reports as well because they were extraordinary. However, we need to get into some cricket, mate.
Yep. Hooky, why don't you start us off with Ben's best?
Ben's best. So 356 days ago to the day today, Nathan McSweeney was dropped from the Australian Test team after just three tests. And 6 days later, on Boxing Day, his replacement, Sam Constance, ordained himself as Australian cricket's new Christmas gift, the best toy under the tree. And McSweeney went from Test player to almost instant afterthought. I want to take you through what's happened over the 11 months since then. He's captained South Australia to not one, but two titles. He's only the eighth South Australian captain to do so. Let me tell you about the company that he's in. Clem Hill, Sir Donald Bradman, not sure if you've heard of him, Les Favell, Ian Chappell, David Hooks, Andrea McCauley, and if you throw in the Adelaide strikers, Talia McGrath. So they are seven of the all-time great South Australian cricket leaders, and Nathan McSweeney is now one of them. Add into that, in particular, with his 226 for Australia A against the England Lions last week, he's put on, in his last eight hits, 549 runs at 78.4. Now, he's 26 years old, Soph. His best, I reckon, is still ahead of him. And as we head into this Christmas, I might argue right now, as a recycled gift, we've all recycled gifts before, haven't we? You're looking at me with a knowing look on your face, I can tell. But he might be the most exciting thing under the tree this Christmas. And Sam Constance, who was the most exciting thing last year, suddenly he's the socks and jocks, you know. So Nathan McSweeney, for the way that he has embraced the opportunity that he got, yes, the disappointment, has worked with it, and here he is still knocking on the door of the Australian Test team, I think it's pretty incredible. He's Ben's best this week.
Well, nothing wrong with socks and jocks as a Christmas gift. I'm just throwing it out there. You can never have too many. But I had a sneaky suspicion Nathan McSweeney might be your Ben's best, and I do think he's an excellent choice. He's 26, though, so I think he's knocking on the door pretty loudly, and he's still in the running for a spot. He's only 26.
The other thing, Soph, is that Travis Head has gone from where I think he probably is best suited to bat at number five and gone up to opening. And I just feel like Nathan McSweeney is that more middle order player than an opener that he was in the last test. That's actually might be the spot that's for him. Josh Inglis is there at the moment, and we might talk about him in the next 10-15 minutes. But geez, I reckon that Nathan McSweeney as a number five for Australia is a really exciting prospect in the next 12 to 18 months. Who knows? We'll see. But he's doing a lot right at the moment, and I'm really pleased for him. And he's a ripper young guy too. I mean, I've had to deal with him a bit, media and so forth. Just so respectful, understands his responsibilities as a captain of a South Australian domestic team. And I would just love to see him break his way back into that side and maybe end up with a career that finishes with something like 30 tests. I think that is eminently within his grasp.
Well,
have you got a Sophie Starr?
Yeah, well, taking us straight back to the golf, I do apologise. My Sophie Starr is Jack Buchanan.
Our not Rory listeners. Again?
It's not Rory. He didn't do quite well enough. The smile was good, but it wasn't that good. It is friend of the pod, Jack Buchanan. He finished T18 at the Australian Open, but it was really his round three, one of the best rounds of the tournament. That's 7 under, 6 birdies and an eagle. Our listeners, I encourage them to go and listen to the pod. It's the third round. He was great enough to speak to us, and we got some great insights, not just from him, but also his coach, Adrian Wickstein, which we interviewed back in five to six weeks ago. So really, we're ahead of this charge that Jack Buchanan has found himself on.
First with the news, Sophie Hilditch. Well done. I did love Jack's story, and we have discussed it, Wallace and I, but his... You ask, tell me about your eagle. Must have been amazing. Nah, not that amazing, he says. It's a par four. I just drove it to 8 feet and hold the putt. Nothing too special. Drove it to 8 feet. He playing a different sport to me, Soph.
Yeah, he was playing a completely different sport. His ball striking was just incredible throughout the entirety of that week. In fact, his round two was his worst round, I think, from memory. But he still hit tee to green perfectly. His putter was just a little bit cold. And he was pretty open about telling us that after round one, saying, I could have gone a lot lower if my putter had been hot. And really, that 7 under was thanks to the ball striking, but really thanks to that flat stick. It was unbelievable and incredible to watch. But Ben, let's go back to the cricket, because the Ashes match two was played during the Australian Open, and I do apologise, but I was stuck at the golf from about 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wallace was riding my coattails and dragging me every which way and that. I was out watching 7 South Australians. So I'm sorry, it was over a bit too quick again, and I didn't really get a big chance to watch it. But what I can say is Australia won at the Gabba. They take a 2-0 lead into the Ashes. Mitchell Starc, once again, your man of the match, not only performing with the ball, but really winning the match for the Australians with the bat. Hooky, what are some of your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I feel like Australia... I don't think they're playing their absolute best cricket, and they're not playing their best cricket because they don't have their best team. And I do think that they have given England little opportunities over the course of the match, and England has just been very, very kind to keep giving those opportunities back to the Australians. And you can't do that with a quality test team like the Australian team, in as much as, yeah, its best attack has been largely decimated, and we all expected Usman Khawaja to be there still. So the fact that England have, in the endeavour, I suppose, to try and put pressure on the Australians, I think you voiced this really well a couple of weeks ago, they've put too much pressure on themselves. And that's why they find themselves a long way behind in this Ashes series. It's almost impossible for them to come back from here. They're enjoying a few days off. Up at Noosa Heads. Don't we all love a little holiday at Noosa on Hastings Street, Soph? But, yeah, I do feel like they will have to produce an absolute miracle to still be in this series by the end of the Adelaide Test.
We're talking about the Noosa Holiday. What are your thoughts there? There's a fair bit of criticism getting their way, saying they should really be playing a practice match ahead of the Adelaide Test. They failed to do so before the Gabba. Are you thinking they're going to be coming in a bit underprepared for the Adelaide Test, or do you think they deserve a bit of a break, some team bonding? They are all together as a team. It's not like they're separately out there and doing their own thing.
You're a lot closer to elite sport than me, so if I have my opinion and I will give it, but I'll just ask this question and I'll frame it in this manner. If you had a run of, say, three elite amateur tournaments in a row, and the first two hadn't gone exactly according to plan, but the next one was coming up in a week and you had about 3 days, what would you do? Would you be grinding on the range for those 3 days, or would you just try and give yourself a bit of a mental break?
I'm more of the side of giving myself a bit more of a mental break. So I actually agree with what the English team are doing. I think this was most likely pre-planned. I don't think it's just come out of the blue. And I think also the English came in with a tactic. It obviously hasn't worked to this date, but I don't think they should be running off it. If they need a holiday, they're team bonding. They're out there playing pickleball or whatever it is. I think it's needed. It's a reset. They can't be thinking cricket, 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 cricket the whole way into the Adelaide Test. You can't do it. And I know I come from a golfing background, but I even look at my psych training, and even during the round, I've been explicitly told you cannot hit the ball and spend your whole time as you walk into the next shot thinking about golf and thinking about your next shot. You actually need to let your mind switch off. England have already done their preparation for this Ashes series. There's not much that can be earned by just hitting balls over and over and over and over again at the net, or having balls, you know, hit off to you and you practicing catches over and over and over again. I know my pop is probably rolling in his grave as I'm saying this, because it's completely not what he preached. And I think there is a time and a place for that. And Pop taught me some great lessons with hard work. But I think, you know, I actually stand by the English team in this decision to have a bit of a break before, no doubtedly, they head back to the Adelaide Test and they really start to hone in their skills and start to practice a bit harder. But I think they need a bit of a break.
No, agree, Soph. Third, fourth and fifth tests come up really, really fast. They're all back-to-back from here. This is their only opportunity for a break. I feel like the alternative is if they came here and trained really, really hard for 6 or 7 days, my word, they're going to get awfully stale by the time Melbourne and Sydney comes around. This was the opportunity for them to take a little bit of a breather. I think it's absolutely reasonable. It's wonderful media catnip. We all understand that. But they've leant into it almost, Soph. They've actually said, yep, we're going to Noosa. We'll be hanging around on Hastings Street. We're going for a swim. We're going to have a couple of nice meals. Brought the media along for the ride. Good on them. Lean into it. Stand up. Admit what you're doing. There's no point hiding it, and it's the new world, Soph. And I think refreshing is probably as likely to get, or maybe even more likely to get them a result in the next three tests than grinding it out in the nets and just smashing themselves into submission would have done. Good answer. Well done. Agree.
Well, Australia's team, there looks like Pat Cummins will be appearing for the Adelaide Test, and I dare say Nathan Lyon will be back, saying he's been rested for the pink ball. What do you reckon Australia's team's looking like? Do you think Guaj is getting another hit?
It's a good question. I don't rule out Usman Khawaja coming in for Josh Inglis. I'll wheel back to him very shortly. I do feel like Australian selections over the first two tests have been curious. Nathan Lyon in particular, he played in Perth, and we'd said in the lead-up that I reckon he should pay for a ticket to get in because he's largely going to be a spectator, and that's exactly how it played out, only bowled two overs. I reckon an hour into the Brisbane test, it was evident that he would have been really useful on that surface, and it was only the fact that England self-destruct and Australia has an incredible depth of quality bowling, in particular with a pink ball, that they got out of that, I think, incorrect decision unscathed. And then Josh Inglis, I think he's been really lucky. And I want to take you back to 2021 when Alex Carey first earned his spot in the Australian Test team, and it was on the back of Tim Payne's very public and very embarrassing removal, if you like, self-removal from the Australian team. So Alex Carey had never forced his way into the Test team. And as a South Australian amongst Eastern Staters, I felt like there wasn't absolute trust in him. And Josh Inglis, almost by default, sort of walked into the squad as a bit of a proxy for Alex Carey in case anything went wrong. Now, he's not a terrible player, Josh Inglis, by any stretch. He's a very, very good cricketer. He scored 100 for Australia in the Test Series against Sri Lanka only 6 or 7 months ago. But he's only really been getting a game because he's getting picked as a reserve wicketkeeper. And I think now, back home in Australia, we just need to accept that he's not in the best six batters. I think the ball that got him out was fairly innocuous, and to get bowled like he did was probably a bit of a sign to me that, as good a player as he is, he's not a number five for the Australian cricket team. However, look, they've got away with it. I think we will probably see just the two changes. I think Usman Khawaja is someone they'll flirt with to go and bat at number five, because I do think he's a better player than Josh Inglis. But I reckon that there'll be no faith right now in Usman Khawaja to get through a test match. Rising 39-year-old, has all sorts of issues with his body. His form hasn't been great. I think they want to pick him because they like him. And I think they also would like to pick him because of what he stands for outside of the game, which I think is something that Cricket Australia will embrace. However, I think on balance, Inglis will hold his spot. Head will stay at the top of the order with Jake Weatherald. I think we'll see Pat Cummins and Nathan Lyon come into the team, and most likely Michael Nisa and Brendan Doggett are the ones to miss, unless they're concerned about the long-term health of Scott Boland heading into the two tests where he's renowned as being so damaging, Melbourne and Sydney. But I think it's probably on balance going to be a team that far more resembles what we've seen from the Australian attack in the last 4 or 5 years with Hazelwood out, and that will be Cummins, Stark, Boland and Lyon.
Fair enough. I'm actually leaning towards, I wouldn't be surprised if they rested Boland. Not sure on Cummins' fitness levels, and we might need Boland a lot more fitter for the next two tests. So I think it's a toss-up between Boland and Nisa. Nisa had an outstanding performance at the Gabba, and we cannot ignore that. But you know what? You watch more of the game than I do, so I'll take your word for it. But I think it's a big decision.
Yep, your point's really well made. Michael Nisa had an amazing match in Brisbane, but he is a pink ball specialist. And I think despite what he did in that test match, it would be unreasonable to leave Scott Boland out with his history in test cricket, not just in the last two tests, which have been very, very good, but in the last 2 years. He has always been the go-to and he has always stood up, and it would be unreasonable to leave him out. I can't see Scott Boland being left out unless he's got a slight niggle and they want to save him for Melbourne.
Well, quickly, what do we think about England? What do we reckon their selections will be? Do you think we're going to see a bit of a change up leading into the third test?
I think they would be wise to leave out Ollie Pope and replace him with Jacob Bethell. I've never had faith in Ollie Pope. I watched a lot of the BBL last year when he came in for the Adelaide Strikers, and he never convinced me. I was surprised he was selected as an international player there. I don't think they can run with him. I have heard a bit of a whisper that they might bring him down the order to wicket keep and leave out Jamie Smith. And I think that would be an even bigger mistake because he's not much more than a stopper, Ollie Pope. And if you have a fast bowling attack that gets let down by a wicket keeper, which I think inevitably Ollie Pope will, that will only create more resentment and difficulty within the team. So if I'm the English selectors, I'm making one obvious choice. I'm bringing Jacob Bethell in to bat at three and leaving Jamie Smith where he is. So if I've been recording this podcast on and off for around about 5 years now, I've had some incredible guests, but I don't think I've ever been more excited than the guest that we are going to be introducing to our listeners on Monday, someone who has almost never talked to the media in probably the last 10 years, and he has agreed to talk to us. He's a very, very special person in your life. Tell us who it is.
Hookie, he is actually my idol and the person that I think I'll be forever chasing in this life. It is my dad, Andrew Hilditch. He's agreed to come onto the pod and have a quick talk to us ahead of the Adelaide Test. I'm so excited to speak to him. He doesn't often talk about cricket with me. He normally keeps his views pretty quiet, like you said, away from the media, and I now am part of the media. So he's a bit more quieter around me. No, I'm just kidding. I'm so excited to speak to Dad. He's got some incredible insights. He always keeps an eye on the cricket. He's incredibly knowledgeable. His cricket knowledge, I mean, my brother James inherited it. We got to listen to him before the first test, and I believe Dad's just going to be just as good. So I can't wait for it, Hooky.
A great of South Australian cricket, one of the very, very good test cricketers for Australia, went on to be vice-captain. We'll cover his period that was tumultuous as chairman of selectors of the Australian team. It will be a wonderful conversation. It's going to be great to hear just how he managed and dealt with all of those challenges around what is a very, very difficult job. So I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for badgering him, I suppose, into coming and chatting to us. It's going to be wonderful. It'll drop on Monday. I encourage you to all keep an eye out on where you get your podcast, because Andrew Hilditch, absolutely raw and unfiltered, is going to be a really wonderful chat.
Let's move on from the Ashes, because I know we're probably going to have a big week watching next week. Let's go to the Adelaide Strikers. They've just missed the finals in the WBBL. Last week, it was an exciting last game. It came down between the Strikers and the Sydney Sixers as to who would make the finals. Strikers missed out by one run. Of the final over, they needed 18 runs. Bridget Patterson, playing her 150th match, smashed 14 runs. They then needed three the last delivery, and it was unfortunately a run out, which meant the Strikers missed out on finals. Ben, what positives can we take away from the Strikers' season?
Firstly, that it was a bizarre year, Soph. Yeah. They had three games that were no result, so and two of them were remarkable. One, and, you know, I understand the concept of miss the finals by one run, but they were very lucky to get away with a draw against the, was it the Brisbane Heat? No, sorry, the Sydney Thunder with the match at Adelaide that was very, very wet. And they needed three runs to win, 12 balls remaining, and the umpires pulled them off the field. That was pretty remarkable. We had the ball going underneath the roller at Karen Rolton Oval for that game to be abandoned halfway through. You know, stupid things happened in this series. So sometimes you've just got to sort of throw your arms in the air and say, too bad. Positives. Darcy Brown was absolutely super. She took another step forward, the young pace bowler. And she didn't take a step forward just with the ball, but also with the bat. I think we learned that Amanda Jade Wellington is still an absolute top liner. I think she can be used a bit higher in the batting order. And her leg spin bowling is still absolutely sensational. And Ellie Johnson, second year in the squad, first year in the team, I think she showed a fair bit as well. She certainly got some power and can get moving with the game early. I even think she might be an opener of the future in this form of the game. And then Eleanor LaRosa I really like, and she'll improve the young left hand. I think as much as they'll be disappointed, I reckon there's a lot to like for the future, in particular with their locals.
Well, with that being said, we missed finals, so obviously I've got to ask you the more negative-sided question, but I'll end it with a positive. What areas do you reckon they need to work on? But with that, what can we take away from this year and do better next year?
Yep. This is a very, very average fielding team. Average. Below average. I don't think there's anyone in that team anymore who can really make a positive difference in the field. They moved on Katie Mack at the end of the previous season, who was a wonderful outfielder. Bridget Patterson was another wonderful outfielder who has become the wicketkeeper in the team. And you look at, you know, previously we had Georgia Adams, who was pretty handy in the field as one of our overseas players. Danielle Gibson wasn't great in the field, but she could bat and she could bowl. We've got Tammy Beaumont and Sophie Eccleston in this side, two English players who are quite frankly liabilities in the field. They just don't add anything, and they are unfortunately too reliably going to make mistakes. So the fielding needs to be sorted out with this team for sure. And then I'd probably do a couple of different things with the batting order as well. I love Maddie Penner as a player, but I think she and her top gear is so good. But I think she takes too long to find top gear, and to have her batting at three or even open the batting as she did in the last couple of games and bat in that power play, I just don't think suits her. She needs 10, 15 balls to get going, and you can't waste 10 or 15 balls at the top of the order. So Yeah, there's a lot of things they can do. I love their locals. I'd be definitely overhauling their overseas players. But I still think that there is a lot to like if they can just bring some sharpness to their fielding as well and find some players who can at least do two of three things well. Beaumont and Eccleston do one of three things well, and I don't think that's good enough for an international player.
Well, Hookie, before I move you on to the local district cricket, you spoke to someone whilst I was road tripping whom I was very sad to miss out on. That is Jamie Pennelly, captain of the over-40s team who took out the World Cup in Pakistan last week. Why don't we take a look into that interview now?
Well, when you think of Australian World Cup winning captains, you think of names like Alan Border, Ricky Ponting, Patrick Cummins. Well, we can add Jamie Pennelly to the list. The South Australian icon of club cricket has led the Australian team to victory in the over-40s World Cup in Pakistan. And Panners has been good enough to join us. Jamie, welcome. Congratulations.
Thanks, Hookie. Yeah, really good to be here and always on the back of some triumph. Happy to talk about it too. So thanks for having me.
Well, look, mate, my recollection of your career is that you won plenty of things over the journey and you're still doing the same thing, mate. A week on, how do you reflect on that result? Must have been very, very special.
Yeah, really special. I think, mate, I've just been, you know, you catch up with family and friends and I think I'm reflecting more and it's resonating more with me over this last week than probably while it was going on and even the night after. But, you know, there was the championship game, but it was the whole 2.5 week experience. It's where it was. It's who you're with. It's the games. It's the challenge that I feel has, it's sunken deep with me and a lot of the team. The game was amazing and to finish it off with that great full stop, but I think we're reflecting on the whole journey that we had over 2.5 weeks in Karachi, Pakistan, but wonderful and blessed to hold up a cup with 13 great people as well while we're doing it.
Where does it rank? And that's probably a difficult question. You've been involved in so many Premier Cricket Premierships with Kensington. You've coached the Kensington women's team to the last four straight flags, which is incredible in its own right. This is probably something different, but where does it rank with everything that you've done in cricket?
Oh, such a good question. But I won't rank it because they're all mutually exclusive. But, you know, Hoogie, we've spoken enough. If I said to you in 2025 you'll go to Karachi, that will be a surprise in itself, plus go and play a World Cup. A South Australian will skipper an Australian side, which doesn't happen too much either. And then you'll lose your first game against Sri Lanka and then suddenly, 2 weeks later, you'll be holding the cup aloft against the really fancy Pakistan on their home soil. It ranks really high, but I'd put it on its own. And it's probably more of a, you know, where the 40s and Masters cricket is, it's the inaugural T20 World Cup. So I think it holds itself really well in Cricket Australia Masters history. So we'll take it as a really special moment, but I wouldn't put it any higher than all the others because they're all different, mate. I'll answer it that way.
You talked about losing the first game at Sri Lanka. So it was kind of like the prototype perfect World Cup program, wasn't it? Lose the first game and then go on an absolute tear from there.
Yeah. And look, I mean, poor Sri Lanka, they didn't win a game. You know, they probably thought they were going to set for glory. They didn't win a game after us. So, you probably get us at the right time. We had a couple of trial games, Pakistan and West Indies. But like most tournaments, you know, you just hope you do enough early on to play finals and then play your best cricket at the end. And Sri Lanka were good enough. We were still probably a little bit unders in terms of working out what's best. And the National Bank Stadium, which is a wonderful international ground, you didn't quite necessarily think you'd get a quality ground like that in Karachi. Now, when I say that, it's everyone will say they're all Bunsen burners and they're going to keep low and you better spin to win. But suddenly we had a ground that probably suited pace and we might have bowled spin too much that first game. And we learned pretty well that in the morning, probably bowl first and later on bat first. So we started to learn a lot about our game and the planning and I thought we put a lot of work into that, the whole staff. So nice to give Sri Lanka some joy over back into their country, but we did pretty well after that. We had the people talking about how bad a side we were. We had a few guys on social media telling us how bad we were, but that's okay. We kept it in-house and we did pretty well at the end.
Quite a list of South Australians, some I know well, a couple of others that I'm not so sure of. So on the basis that this is not strictly speaking a South Australian podcast, but that's certainly where its roots lie. Just take us through the South Aussies in the team. Mark Cleary will be someone that if you follow cricket, most people are going to know. Tell us a bit about Ice.
Yeah. Just wonderful to see him still playing. He's got the highest reputation in the side. Obviously, quality South Australian cricketer, played Australia A, then went to Victoria and did wonderful things in local cricket, obviously, as well as interstate, and had that Australia A opportunity. But he was bowler of the tournament, so he was amazing. He still has all the tricks, all the know-how. He broke down on his third over, second to last over of the grand final, so he did really well until that point. But like most bowlers, he wasn't too injured to bowl his fourth over. So he was, and he took a fifer in the grand final. He took, I'm probably being shy of a couple of wickets, but I think he took 23 to 25 wickets in the tournament. Wow. And it wasn't speed, it was guile. It was just quality bowler. I thought he was just an easy utility because I knew when to use him. Playing so much cricket with him, I thought he was the least of my worries where I was going to use him. And he was amazing. And I was so glad to see him get a gig because he was good enough, but also get through and perform so well. He was a rock star over there. So Ice and all his, you know, family and friends were really happy for him to do so well. And he was great for us right till the end. And then Richie Wilde, his best mate over in Mildura. He's an Australian, but he's from English heritage. So we don't always know what he says. He's from Nottingham Forest out that way. So, but he's played now. He was actually an inaugural tourist to New Zealand for Australia. So he played for Australia before all of the other South Australians. And he's a right arm off spinner, left hand bat. And really just a great tourist. He's our fines master, and he's a ripper, really good over there on the other grounds that we played on, spin to win. And he did some really great things with the bat in the lower order. He became the finisher along with a couple of others. So him and Ice, great mates, touring together, seeing them have the banter that they did was excellent. And he had a really great carnival too, Richie. The other one, Sean Matthews, early 40s, if not 40, 41, left arm orthodox, right hand bat. That was his first tour along with Mark's tour. But he played in the Australia one day in T20 quad series up in Brisbane earlier on the year in April and did really well, had a great national carnival, and that's where he got selected for Australia. Did a job with the ball every time, even bowled in the power play sometimes, did a roll with the bat when he needed to, but he's the youngest out of all of them, but he's got a really big future in the Masters because he's got plenty to offer, along with Richie and Mark. They were fantastic. And lovely to see three, including me, four South Aussies play on the Australian side and share some great memories. So it was a great year. South Australia won the Cricket Australia Masters tournament in WA.
That's right.
You know, so it was great to share another triumph for the South Aussies.
And I do think we need to claim Andrew Crook. I mean, he's listed here as Victorian, but he's born and bred South Australian, a bit like the Grand Prix, you know, he's really ours.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because we talked about that a lot. In fact, he got a Victoria tax every time we did the fines because he was South Aussie. So, but what we find is because Mildura's over the border, those three were token Victorians. So it feels like they say we've poached them. So, but Crookie, you know, Crookie did a lot of work off the field as well as on the field. He was a great addition, really, really quality cricketer still. And, Hookie, when you play with players, against them for a lifetime and then you get to play together, there's something special about it, being in the same change room after being in opposition change rooms and then coming together. I hope he had a great experience. All the talk I had with him, I had great chats over breakfast. He was loving it. But, you know, with his business and what he does. He did some great stuff for us on the back of social media communications. So he was a great asset on and off the field, Crookie.
Mm. Yeah, fantastic. I noticed the skipper brought himself on to bowl in the semi-final against South Africa. 3 wickets in 3 balls, the mighty hat-trick. How easy is this game?
Yeah, not that easy. It was a bit of a tough tour, but it was nice in the semi-final to play a bit of a role there. It was nice. I was feeling like it was probably an important time. It was a bit tricky sometimes with, as skipper, I must admit, I feel maybe not mastered when to be a bowler and when to be a skipper, even though you're in your 40s, you think, yeah, you've got a down pat, but you still got to have the gamble of, do you bring yourself on at certain times, or is there other options? So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And it's amazing, mate. They still miss the straight ones, don't they?
You know? I made a living out of it myself, mate. So I don't know why it should be any different for anyone else. Yeah. Hey, it's over 40s, and I don't exactly know how old you are, but you're well over 40, mate. You live cricket, you bleed it, you got kids who play, you're coaching, you're still playing from time to time for Kensington as well. How do you keep finding the passion for it?
Good question, mate. My wife will tell you differently, but look, I think, you know, when cricket gives you so much, and I'm trying to find different areas that you might not have explored to enjoy cricket at a different level. But, you know, I'm turning 50 in 30 days, less than 30 days. And, I was definitely the oldest, if not second oldest on tour. But I feel with things in front of you, I'm really motivated. And as I'll say, age is a number, but isn't it amazing? I wouldn't have thought, like I said to you, I wouldn't have thought that this was something that could be achievable at early on. You finished your first grade. You tried hard to kind of push to higher honours. You then do some coaching. You then explore a different part, like the women's, and then you've got kids that you go through their journey, and then you play and you still play yourself. And it feels like there's opportunities all around the place now to explore different parts of cricket and what it is. And I must admit, it's wonderful to play with your peers again. I haven't done that for 20 years. So to play with your peers and understand how smart they are and the quality cricketers around Australia, and I'm sure there's many more than just outside the side, brings new passion and desire, and then skippering and maybe bringing a different flavour to how you lead versus someone else. Just you explore the person you are as the player you are. I always think you learn a lot about yourself as a person, not just the cricketer you are. And I find I'll keep on finding different ways with the coaching of the women, who I am in terms of what I believe in and who I am as a person, as well as, you know, as a skipper of men, you know, different to, you know, you come respected because the juniors just say, hey, listen to him. But it's kind of good to explore different parts of what cricket's giving me at the moment. And from a personal point of view, that's why I keep on playing, because it keeps on opening different doors and, yeah, lets me have different pockets of fun as well as learning.
People aren't watching this, of course, but I can see you across from me in the Kensington, looks like the Indigenous playing top there, Panners. You've had an incredible career with Kensington, part of their team of the century, played in numerous premierships, as I said, but your most notable achievement of recent times is what you've done with the women's program, won the last 4 premierships with a really wonderful group. That must give you some great joy, mate.
Yeah, joy's a great word. I've got a daughter who I think I would be so irrelevant to her in life if we didn't have a touch point of cricket. Being a 17-year-old girl, there's not much dad can offer. But if I can, if I could just be hanging around so I can be a part of her life, and obviously with my son playing and I'm still playing, we've got some nice touch points. But the women, to me, have been probably out of everything, has been a part of my career that I cherish really fondly. They're very, very special to me, and hopefully I've got a special place with them. But they're such a wonderful group, and they change every year. Like, we don't unfortunately keep the nucleus the same, but that program now, it's my 8th year with them, has just evolved to being just a wonderful, I don't know, to a certain degree, a personal development program where we play cricket as part of it. And, you know, Sarah Lowe is a wonderful leader. Getting to know her on a better level and understanding what she's done for the club and what a wonderful stalwart she is for, you know, South Australian cricket. And, you know, without mentioning names, you know, Bridget Patterson, getting to know her, what she's done for South Australian cricket. And, you know, there's so many, Eliza Doddridge, Shay Daly, Rachel Church, just pioneers of our women's program. Jane Lowe, these are wonderful servants of our club, and it's been wonderful to be part of their program and just sharing in, yeah, the four in a row is wonderful, but we talk about it doesn't define who we are. It's a wonderful program where I look to see what those girls are doing in 10 years. I think they'll be wonderful, wonderful citizens and people of South Australia, if not Australia, because of what they've done as cricketers, but also people and the way they nurture the young ones in. Tonight we have 40 girls all in black, brown and gold. And when I came, we probably had, if now it'll be 13 at training, and it will be mixed across 1-2. Now we have 40. The nets are bulging. They're all on the grass. We've got music going, laughing. I look around and sometimes you pinch yourself. And that's not on the back of me. That is on the back of all the hard work of many people around the club that seeing this wonderful program. So I'm touched, sometimes emotional about it, but I'm very passionate about the girls' program and what women's cricket and girls' cricket can be. And hopefully we've got a nice grassroots, nice piece in the puzzle and grassroots at Kensington Cricket Club.
The training in the nets, the Jamie Pennelly nets, no less, I seem to recall, as what they're known as these days. Four premierships in a row, only one team's won five in a row, as far as I can tell, in South Australian women's cricket, and that goes back to 1952-53. I wouldn't be surprised if you already knew that anyway, but a possibility of breaking essentially a 70-year record.
Yeah, it'd be really special, and I know we talk a lot about every year is different, so for the year and the group that we've got, it's the one we're focusing on now. That will be special, but the competition's red hot, and you know, we've got to keep growing and keep getting better. But it's really special. The 5-peat would be great, but you know what? If we keep on just growing our program, playing the best cricket we can be, and being the best version, I'm happy regardless of the premierships. But I tell you, it is going to be red hot this year. I reckon all 5 sides are strong, and when they're at full strength, anyone can win. So hopefully we're on the right side of it. I hope we have a crack at the opportunity to go 5 in a row all the same.
A little bit of Adelaide blood in me, mate. I don't know that I'm absolutely desperate to see 5 in a row. You knocked off my Buffaloes a couple of years back when I thought they were riding pretty in that game, and you, of course, found a way to turn it around. Last one, mate. You're on the SACA board. Of course, the test match is coming up in a week or two. Being on the board, you probably get into some pretty exclusive clubs. You may rub shoulders with the current Australian captain, Pat Cummins. Do you think you might just say to him, yeah, know what it's like to take out a world title, mate?
Yeah, if I get the chance, I'll definitely compare notes. But I'm just really proud of the board. Will Rayner runs a great ship. I'm really proud of the board, but the players, the people around there, you know, a year or so ago, you know, we're striving for a Shield victory. 12 months on, we got a one-day men's one-day title, a Sheffield Shield long-awaited. It was on the back of great work by the WNCL and a back-to-back strikers. The under-19 SA boys have just won their first title in 13 years. You know, I hope the girls in the WNCL and the boys can go back-to-back, but from a cricket point of view, it's been really healthy. The board is a wonderful place to be. I know success brings that, but they're working so hard on how we can be the best cricket club in the world all the time, on and off the field. The people around that group, I think, makes it. So I'm hoping that we have a great Adelaide test. 5 days, if I had a wish list, mate, 5 days would be magic. Yep. Australia to make sure that the Ashes stays at home. Ideally goes to the last session, 5 days. The Festival of Cricket out the back to at Village Green would be amazing. And we have a really good Adelaide test match, which we all, everyone, fingers crossed, hopes for.
Something not dissimilar to 2006, I think it'd work out pretty well, wouldn't it? A victory come from nowhere at about 6:30, day 5.
Amazing Adelaide Mark II would be absolutely brilliant.
Jamie, so good. Thank you for joining us. Congratulations on everything you've achieved. Good luck with the Browns over the course of the rest of the summer. And look forward to catching up with you at the test.
Hookie, always a pleasure, mate. Love your work too, mate. It's a privilege to be on, and keep going, mate. Thanks again.
Good on you, mate. Thank you.
Thanks. Cheers.
That was a great chat, Hookie. Jamie has done incredibly well, but I tell you what, it'd be an even more amazing story if he could coach the Kensington women to the fifth straight premiership in a row.
You know what, Soph? They are on track as well, and it's a really good segue into what I really love talking about, and that's local cricket and our local cricket wrap.
Well, new challenge for you. It's not a new challenge, but you've never actually managed to conquer this challenge. I'm going to give you 1 minute to talk about each of the topics that I'm throwing your way. This time I'm putting a timer. Wallace, get that horn ready for me because he has never, ever, ever run on time.
Play the mastermind music in the background.
Hookie, give us a quick recap of the Premier First Grade Division 1.
Yeah, Soph, well, Premier First Grade Division 1, it's kind of like same old, same old. Kensington, once again, way out in front. The Premiers from last year. Tea Tree Gully, probably the surprise for me. They were finished second last year at the end of the minor round, and they're 0-3 thus far. They went on to play in the grand final against Kensington, of course. They've got a huge game against Sturt this week. That is at Hawthorn. And Sturt, who are sitting in third position, they've done really well considering they've survived quite the player purge. Reggie Ells has gone to West Torrens. Mac Harvey has gone to West Torrens as well. Harry Matias has gone to Kensington. So Sturt have done remarkably well considering they've lost a couple of big-name players. So this is kind of must-win for Tea Tree Gully, who I reckon would be eyeing finals for sure. Three other games going on, but I know I've only got a minute. I'm leaving it there.
Well done. 14 seconds to spare. Incredible
behaviour. You do have the stopwatch out.
It doesn't carry on to the next one, though. Premier First Grade Division 2. Let's go.
Glenelg top, no surprise there, were by far and away the top of Division 1 2 years ago and then had a poor year last year, found themselves in Division 2. The big surprise in my eyes, Soph, is Northern Districts. They're second at the moment. They had an outright win thanks to the Sacker under-19s, which was a bit of a gift. But then they've won two more. They play University this week, and University is the team that your brother is heavily involved with, the team that I had penciled in as going for the premiership this year. But if Northern District win, they keep pace with Glenelg, and top spot in that competition automatically goes into Division 1. So that's a massive game this week, Northern District's taking on University.
Another one. Well done, Hookie. Let's head over to the women. Give me the rundown of the Premier First Grade women.
Four teams are still in it, Soph. West Torrens are the team that's well off the pace. We've identified that on this podcast before. That is just one club that I'm a little bit concerned about because they've just lost a lot of their resources in recent times. Glenelg are top, but they lost last week to Adelaide. The next three teams are only separated by percentage. Kensington, four-time premiers, they're second, and they play Glenelg this week. So that's going to be really interesting to see if Kensington can reclaim top spot or if Glenelg can hold that position. Sturt are third and have the bye. Adelaide are fourth, but they play West Torrens, so they could conceivably jump to second there. That will make it really interesting. And then, of course, in the T20 competition, Kensington and Adelaide have qualified for the T20 Grand Final. That will be on January 18. The last games were December 1, so that's a long wait, but those two sides are going to do battle in a massive T20 clash.
Oh, bang on a minute. Well done, folks. You can't see it, but there is a timer on Wallace's screen. He's looked up. He's seen the 5 seconds, and I think he's cut off a bit at the end. But creativity, I like it, thinking on your feet. But my favourite part, let's hear your community player of the week. And I might allow a minute and a half because you did have 30 seconds to spare for both the men's Division 1.
You do know that I have worked in
first
radio.
First grade, sorry.
You do know, Soph, that I have worked in radio before where we do have hard outs, and I've had to sort of manipulate all of the things I'm talking about to run it right up to with a second to go. Community Player of the Week. I'm running with a kid called Lachlan Clues. His nickname? No. No Clues. I reckon you would have liked that one, Soph. He did play for Northern Districts for a couple of years. He's gone back to Yadunda Robertstown in the Barossa League. He's taken 21 wickets this summer at an average of just 10. So dominating that competition. So Northern District 23-24. He's played his last 2 years at Yadunda Robertstown. He took 33 wickets in 10 games last year. That was in A2. Now he's dominating A1 with 21 wickets this summer at 10. Would love to see little Lockie No Clues make his way back to Premier Cricket at some point, because I reckon he's got something going for him, but right now he's the Community Player of the Week.
Lockie, and you've worked for the media, been on the radio. Why didn't you tell me this to start with? I would have been putting the timer up way before.
Well, you know the beauty of a podcast, though. If I can go for as long as I like, we could make these hour and a half epics every week. I could just keep rambling on about stuff that no one actually cares about. In fact, I kind of do that anyway.
Well, the rate we're going, it is going to be about an hour and a half of this podcast. We're not even decided part one, part two yet. But look, we are going to wrap it up, but we would be amiss if we didn't hit Hooked on Sports Player of the Year. Hookie, quick recap of what exactly this means if it's a listener jumping on for the first time.
Yeah, okay. So we take every match that South Australia plays in elite open men's and women's competitions, and we give a 3-2-1 for every game. So it's kind of like the Brownlow Medal. Now, the only thing that we will do at the end of the year is we will weight the women's games on the theory that they will have played less games than the men. So if the men play 16 and the women play 10, then all of the women's votes will be multiplied by 16 and divided by 10. So we come up with an even score. Winner take all at the end. I've got some more votes for you, Soph, in the draw versus WA. So this is two Sheffield Shield games that we've seen since last we chatted. I gave Henry Thornton the 3 votes, took 6 wickets in the match. Just couldn't break through at the end, but that was a really strong game from Henry. Great to see him return to form. I gave 2 votes to Nathan McSweeney. He's already been talked about in this podcast. He was the leading run scorer for South Australia in that match with 68 and led us to a really solid first innings lead. And I'm going to give 1 vote to Harry Nielsen. Scored handy lower runs for South Australia and kept absolutely superbly so. If this was a pink ball match, Jamie Smith demonstrated for England how difficult it can be for wicketkeepers in a pink ball match. Alex Carey proved how important they are in pink ball cricket. I thought Harry Nielsen did exactly the same job for South Australia in that match. I'll jump across to the second game that we saw for South Australia in the Sheffield Shield. It was a 10-wicket win over Tasmania at home at Adelaide Oval. I gave 3 votes to Liam Scott. He's been a little bit unlucky in the voting so far this year, Soph, but he absolutely deserved his 3 votes. He was dominant with the bat, scored 147 in the first innings. He took 3 wickets over the course of the match, including the most threatening Tasmanian batter in each innings. 2 votes to Jordan Buckingham. Under normal circumstances, he probably gets 3, but Liam Scott was so good. He took 8 wickets for the match, 4 wickets in each innings. He was superb. He was taking early wickets as well, which is so important for an opening bowler. And I gave 1 vote to Jake Lehman. Another 100 for Jake. What a renaissance his career has had. 100 from 97 balls. He put on 127 with Liam Scott. So he picks up the 1 vote. 3 to Liam Scott, 2 to Jordan Buckingham, 1 to Jake Lehman in the win over Tassie. Righto, Soph, so that gets us to a leaderboard. And we have a new leader. Nathan McSweeney has jumped up from 7 votes to 9. He leads by 1 from Mackenzie Harvey on 8. Jake Lehman, with his 1 vote for that century, has moved up to 7 votes. So he's in 3rd position and an equal 4th on 6 votes. Nathan McAndrew and Liam Scott jumps up with that incredible all-round performance against Tassie. Plenty more on the leaderboard who have votes, but that's our top 5 right now.
Yeah, tight leaderboard, but like you said, a lot more of the season to go, so there's going to be a lot more shifting and changing in that leaderboard. Hookie, as always, I have enjoyed immensely our discussion on cricket. You do just run away. I've now learned that I can just have a timer to get you to be quiet for a little bit and maybe let me talk every now and then, but no, loved it, Hookie. Thank you, as always.
So I'll just make the point that I reckon the longest answer delivered in the episode today was from you. I'll be going back over every answer with a stopwatch from here. The other thing I'll say, looking forward to catching up with you at the test. I'm sure we'll find a brief time for a little adult beverage together as we plan what we're going to chat about next week.
I'm already picturing those red, yellow and blue tents and I cannot wait to go out the back, have a little PIMS, but then also can't wait to sit in those stands. The Adelaide spectators are always brilliant at the Adelaide test.
wear the pink dress. You'll be popular with the young upstarts out the back there.
And on that note, thank you, Hooky. I'll speak to you next week.
See you, mate.
That stumps on this episode of the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. Thanks for listening. Help us reach more cricket-minded people just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company next time on the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show.